Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Reason to Kill, an Amos Perisman mystery, by Andy Weinberger. Narrated by Joe Barrett.
Abyssal Zun, Abyssal Reigen, a Record dem Kapsulegen, a big isn't, can man click like sein? Bit of sun, a bit of rain. A quiet place to lay your head. As long as you're well, you can be happy. A big isn't. As long as you're well.
Chapter 1. My phone jingles just as I push the down button inside the elevator. I fumble around and reach into my pocket. Too late. Whomever it was hung up. Just as well, I think. Par for the course, really. I've been meaning to move out of Park La Brea for a long time now. Probably as long as we've lived here. Funny how things just never happen. I'm not complaining, it's too late for that, but the truth is, you fall into a situation. You sign a lease. You know damn well it's not what you want, but it's comfortable enough, or at least bearable. You tell yourself over and over again you hate it, and you do. Still, it's familiar. You don't have to think about it. That counts for more than you'll ever know. You give an automatic wave to the guards at the front gate. You've made peace with the sour smell in the elevator. You've stopped noticing the gray walls and dingy light fixtures. Every week you see the same sullen janitor, Guillermo, standing there hunched over his bucket, mopping up near the metal mailboxes. And okay, he's never said one goddamn word to you all these years. Still, you think you share a bond. Fellow inmates, that's who we are. Right, amigo? Prisoners in the same 12-story Art Deco sanitarium. The elevator halts at the fourth floor. A short, white-haired lady hobbles on. She smooths down her skirt. She reaches over to tap the button for the mezzanine, and as she does, my phone rings again. Before I can get it out of my pocket, it dies a second time. Fuck, I say under my breath. The old woman glares at me. I didn't mean it, I tell her. Why'd you say it, then? Look, I say, leave me alone. I've had a hard day. It's only 11 a.m., young man. I've been up all night, I lie. Is that my problem? She says. She points her gnarly finger in my face. Don't say fuck anymore, okay? It's rude. I shrug. I don't like her. But she's entitled to her narrow-minded opinion, I figure. Only everyone in this place has an opinion. That's the trouble. Loretta and I settled here because it was cheap, but not so cheap as to be dangerous. Not like South Central or Boyle Heights, and because it was close to our jobs, and maybe as an afterthought because it had Jews in the neighborhood. Neither one of us gives a fig about religion, you understand. My wife and I have always accepted all sorts. But being around people like yourself, landsmen, people who secretly enjoy eating chazerai and can tell a decent joke, well, it was inviting, I guess. Back then there was no fancy Grove shopping center. No Whole Foods, no Trader Joe's. There was the CBS lot and Cantor's Delicatessen and an actual farmer's market where they sold broccoli and chicken and heirloom tomatoes. Real food straight off the truck. That was before the days of packaged candy and personalized license plates for kids, and people came from all over to be on television quiz shows and to eat. Loretta grew up in Northern California. At first, this was strange to her. But I knew it because I graduated from Hollywood High, which isn't that far away, and because my cousin Shelley had an apartment just off Fairfax. This was our turf. Or his turf, anyway. Now I'm on the mezzanine. It's a bright, sunny September day. There's a breeze blowing in from the Pacific, and they say it might rain later on, but I still have time to take my walk. This is what I do these days. Walk. Loretta and I used to do it together before she got sick. Now it's just me. Me and 20 million other people. They all walk faster than I do, and lots of them run. They've got their fancy Italian track shoes on and their headbands, and have that determined look in their eyes that says they've only got another 2 miles to go, and by God, they're going to get there. I wish them luck. Sometimes, when they sprint by me, I think I must be the oldest person in L.A. Oh well, Perisman. The race isn't always to the swift, is it? I head east on 3rd and turn onto Detroit, which is mostly large two-story Spanish houses that have been cut up into studio apartments. The crisp wind makes my cheeks turn red, and I have to be careful and keep my eyes on the ground because the pavement can suddenly crack or jut up, especially when it's too close to tree roots. I've stumbled a few times. When I get to the corner of 6th, my cell phone starts jingling in my pocket. I don't recognize the number, but so few people call me these days, I'd be a damn fool to ignore it.
"Parisman here." "Mr. Parisman," a gravelly voice says. "You don't know me, but..."
"No," I say. "You're right. Who are you? Did you call before?"
"I tried."
"Well, next time try harder, okay?"
"I'll do that," says the voice. "Anyway, the reason I called... Your name was given to me by a Detective Marlborough. He's retired now. I believe he worked in Culver City."
"Marlborough, yeah. I knew him. Sweet kid. We haven't talked in a couple years, though."
"Yes, well," the voice continues, "Detective Marlborough thought you'd be the perfect man for the job I have in mind."
I stop and adjust the collar of my leather jacket. If I stand still much longer, I'm going to come home with a cold. Loretta won't like that.
"Okay, so who are you again? You never said." "The name is Blystiff," he says. "Pincus Blystiff. Most people call me Pinky. It's easier to remember. Detective Marlborough said an awful lot of good things about you."
"That's terrific. You tell him the check's in the mail, okay? Meanwhile, what can I do for you?"
There's a pause. "I don't think I should discuss it over the phone. It's a little bit sensitive. But I'll make it worth your while, I promise. Maybe we could meet somewhere. Is that possible?"
"We could do that."
"Because it'd be much better. I mean, I'd feel more comfortable if we sat down face to face, got to know one another, maybe have a cup of coffee somewhere. That'd be my preference. Are you free right now?"
"Am I free? Hell, I've been free for months, ever since I worked that Diamant case. The one where the shul on La Brea hired me to double-check what really happened when their famous rabbi dropped dead eating soup at Cantor's. Free is a euphemism in my book. Free is what you are when you don't want to retire yet, but nobody's beating a path to your doorbell. It's a terrible thing to be free like that. It's like you already have one foot in the grave, and if you're not careful, well...
Free? Sure I'm free. You want to have coffee?
I'm out walking right now, but I could meet you. I'm about a mile from Cantor's. It's on Fairfax by Beverly. Want to meet me there? You know where that is?"
"Of course," he says. "I've lived here a long time."
"Good," I tell him. "But it'll take me maybe a half hour. I'll be at the bakery section right by the door. I have a weakness for their rugelach."
"Sure," says Pinky Blystiff. "But how will I know you?"
"Easy," I say. "I'll be the oldest guy there. Without my Dodgers cap on, I have gray hair. It hasn't been combed in a while. You'll probably think I need a haircut. Oh, and I'll be wearing my old bomber jacket from World War II.
"You were in World War II?
"The jacket, not me."
"Okay," he says. "Fine. See you in half an hour or so."
I turn around and start hiking in the other direction. I don't know what this nudnik wants from me, and I don't trust him already. Something smarmy there in his voice. This is not about a job. No, he wants a donation, probably, for some fracocta cause.
He's a salesman. I should plant a tree in Israel.
Come on, I'll tell him. Israel's a tiny country. How many goddamn trees do they need? He won't know what to say when I put it to him that way. It may not stop him, though. He'll buy me a donut and a cup of coffee, and I'll end up telling him everything I know. What kind of deal is that? On the other hand, he mentioned Marlborough. That counts. The last time Denny and I worked together, it had to do with a well-dressed corpse they found in an alley behind a gay bar on La Cienega. The body belonged to a pharmaceutical salesman from Denver named Norman Hurst. Marlborough, who was not naturally inclined toward homosexuals, thought the bar owner might possibly have had a hand in it. They took him downtown, chatted with him, and somehow, after the first hour, my name came up. He told them I could vouch for him, which wasn't so surprising, really. The owner's name was Simon Goldblatt. We went to Hebrew school together. I knew him pretty well. He was a sweet, pimply guy back then, and even if his voice cracked, he was never shy about chanting the blessings over the Torah. Simon hired me a few days later to help clear his reputation. What I found out was it was way too dark inside his establishment. You could barely see the menu, let alone a stranger's face. None of the regulars noticed Norman Hurst enter or exit, and it turned out her...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?